My name is Dave Von Kleist, and I've always been a musician and a singer. I was in high school in bands and stuff like that. And once I got into my adult years, I got into broadcasting. I was doing radio and television and commercials and announcements. I got my broadcaster's license in 1979. I did TV commercials and narrations, et cetera, et cetera. And in the 90s, I started to really pay attention to what was going on with world affairs, decided to become a talk show host. And so I started on a little radio station in the state of Connecticut. Then I moved on to Texas, and I joined forces with Joyce Riley, and she and I got married, and we became the American Gulf War Veterans Association. And so through the mid to late 90s, we were traveling from coast to coast to coast to coast, trying to help the veterans that had come back from the first Gulf War because of all the problems that they were having. And we were able to meet with and befriend people in the military, people in the government, you know, senators, congressmen, et cetera, et cetera. And then Joyce and I started the radio show The Power Hour in the year 2000. And of course, we were on the air the morning of September 11th, 2001. And that was a very interesting day, to say the least. I was getting ready to go on the air, and I was living in the state of Missouri, right in the center of the United States. And I connected to the network. We had a digital phone line. We connected to the network up in Minneapolis. And anyway, so I got the producer to, hey, Jason, how you doing? Okay, check, check. Sound good? Okay, how much time have I got? 30 seconds? Okay, fine. So I'm getting ready. And, I forgot to turn on my television monitor. Here's CNN and here's Fox. And I looked up and oh, my word. Oh, my dear God, what's going on in New York? And meanwhile, 3, 2, 1, I'm on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, before we do the introduction to the show, listen carefully. I need you to run, don't walk, to your television. Put in a tape and start taping any network you can. Something horrible is going on in New York City. So all over the country, people were putting videotapes in. Of course, 3 minutes later on live television, we saw the second tower, the South Tower, get hit. And it was obviously a very, very sad and horrible day. Well, about 2 weeks later, GW was on a press conference, and he said, we got to stop showing these terrible attacks on America no more because America needs time to heal. So the network stopped showing any replays of what transpired on September 11th. Well, in the meantime, I started getting videotapes in the mail, and I got tapes from all over the country, including the New York City area. And it occurred to me that ABC has ABC footage, NBC has NBC footage, ABC, CNN, Fox, they all have their own footage, and they were not giving any releases. So you couldn't get that footage anymore. However, I had a box from all these videotapes, and I had all the footage. And in the months that followed, it started going through this these videotapes. And it blew my mind. And I felt that, you know, inasmuch that there was probably no other place in the country, nobody else had access to this video footage, I felt obligated to create a documentary. And that was called 9/11 in Plain Sight. And it went worldwide. It went viral. It was on television in Australia, not once, but twice on the ABC network. It was presented to the Japanese parliament. One of the members of the parliament saw it, and they called an emergency session. They showed this video to the Japanese parliament, and they immediately pulled all support out of the Middle East. So I'm sure the Pentagon wasn't too happy about that. But they also showed it in a couple of countries in Europe, but not here, of course. So as this made the rounds, I started getting contacted from the people that I knew in the years previous, military people and members of government. And they said, hey, Dave, you know, that's one heck of a documentary you put together there. You're asking some serious questions. And I responded by saying, yes, I'm asking questions that some people don't want asked. Would you like to talk about it? And they went, yeah. So I started working on the second film, which was 9/11 Ripple Effect. And I talked to General, Albert Stubblebine and Colonel Doug. Let me see. What was his first name? Douglas? George, oh gosh, I can't remember his name right now. But anyway, I talked to a bunch of experts from the Pentagon. Albert Stubblebine was in charge of photo analysis for 25 years for the Pentagon. And George, whatever his name was, I can't remember now. he was in charge of identification of aircraft and aircraft parts. I also spoke to Russ Wittenberg, who was a United Airlines pilot, and the flight 175 was his regularly scheduled flight, but he was not on duty that day. So I talked to all these different experts, and that's how the second film, 9/11 Ripple Effect, came into being. And yeah, I don't claim to have 100% of all the information, but I certainly had enough to challenge the official story, which, of course, was never supported by any evidence. Condoleezza Rice had made a press conference a week after the September 11th attacks on September 18th. And she stated, and I quote, she says, "We have definitive proof and evidence that links Osama bin Laden and the Taliban to the attacks on 9/11, and we will release this information in due time." Well, they never released that information. So that, in essence, makes the official story a conspiracy theory, because there was no, they never presented evidence to support that. So anyway, that's how the documentaries came into play.
What about the 9/11 Commission report? What about that?
Well, the 9/11, all I can say is you don't look for what you don't want to find. You know, I mean, they never even mentioned this Building 7, the Solomon Brothers building. They didn't discuss the explosions that were going on all around the, around the building. And there was just so much stuff that they just didn't put out. The NIST report was just, a total waste of time.
Well, look, let's just have a look at a couple of the authors. One is a guy called Philip Marshall, who's himself an airline pilot, who wrote a book called The Big Bamboozle, and then mysteriously committed suicide along with killing, I believe, both of his children and his dog, or maybe it was just one of his children. And then there was the well-famous Michael Rupert, who it does look like committed suicide, but he was a Los Angeles detective. So
yes, I met with him several times.
Well, some of these people, I mean, they maybe managed to get a book out or two, maybe a documentary. Sounds like you're a survivor from this kind of clutch of Americans that have decided that we're going to report on this truthfully.
Well, all I can say is I got fed up with all of the infighting and bickering within the 9/11 truth movement. I mean, when I put my documentary out there, one of the issues that I put out that nobody else wants to talk about is the fact that if you watch the video clips of the planes hitting the towers, you'll notice that there is a flash that occurs on the building just before the plane makes contact. Now, you can see that in the Naudé Brothers film. That's the film of the first tower being hit with the firefighters in the street. You may recall that particular video clip. The firefighters in the street, and then you hear the jet fly overhead, and the camera pans up just in time to catch the first plane hitting the first tower. And when you slow it down and look at it very carefully, you see that there is a flash that occurs just before the plane hits the tower. Now, if that's just an anomaly, fine. Well, let's take a look at the second tower. And the second tower, of course, by that time, all of the television cameras around were focused on the Trade Center. So there are several different angles of Flight 175 slamming into the South Tower. And in the four clearest angles that we had, there is very clearly a flash that occurs before the plane hits the tower. Now, the other thing that I was drawing attention to is that on that plane, that the supposedly Flight 175, there appeared to be something attached to the belly of the plane. Now, I don't know what it is. It just looked like there's this bulge or this thing. I don't know what it is. Some people were saying, oh, it was a missile or it was a laser. I'm not going to go out on the limb and say what it is because I don't know what it is. But what I do know is that it's not supposed to be there. Frankly, I don't care if it was Pee Wee Herman, strapped to the belly of the plane. Whatever it is, it's not supposed to be there. And it just so happens that whatever it was directly in line with the flash. So the point is that I got sideways with some of the people in the 9/11 truth movement because they were saying to me, well, if you don't know what it is, you shouldn't be talking about it.
Well, that's just not true, is it? I mean, you know, you can show evidence. Yeah, you can show evidence. And I mean, you know, one of the things I would suggest, having worked in the aviation business, is that the jet fuel kerosene is non-flammable. You can't actually set light to it very easily. You have to get it aerosoled.
Correct.
And in order to, you know, to actually make it ignite, this may have been almost like a kind of match. You know, I know it's a bit of a silly analogy, but on that big scale, to make sure that there was ignition of the jet fuel.
That's absolutely correct. And even if that, you know, once that jet fuel ignites, it still isn't going to burn at a temperature to melt the steel. And certainly not at a temperature to bring that steel to temperature that quickly to make the buildings collapse.
Yeah, look, I just wonder if you can pick up on a couple of aspects of those 9/11 attacks, the research that came out of that over the years, for the audience to just say, well, I wonder if you knew about this.
Well, like I said, the flash and the and whatever it was attached to the belly of the plane is something that is never discussed. I haven't heard that discussed by any other 9/11 researcher. I know that Dylan Avery produced the film Loose Change, and when he put out his first edition, he did address the flash and the anomaly on the belly of the plane, but that only was in the first edition. Most people have only seen Loose Change second edition. That's because he pulled the first edition back because of the 9/11 truth movement was going after him.
Yeah, I think he had a lot
of
people leaning on him, you know. And there was a final cut as well of that film. Are there other aspects to the 9/11 attacks that you don't think have been talked about enough?
Well, let's use law enforcement mentality. If you're going to research a crime, you need three things. You need the motive, you need the means, and you need the opportunity. All right. So let's take the clock back to the late 90s. All right. At that particular time, how many world superpowers are there? There's the United States, there's China, and there's Russia. Well, Russia, maybe not so much. They're still recovering from the collapse back in the 80s. All right. And they weren't really a threat. And China is our biggest trading partner. Just go to the dollar store around here. China manufactures almost everything that's being sold in Walmart. So China wasn't that big of a threat. So the Pentagon, so the military industrial complex is there to make money. It's a business. It's a war machine. So let's ask the question, are they, with no threat of a world conflict going on in the late 90s, would they feel financially secure or financially insecure? I think the answer is obvious. They want a war. So now we go to 1999, and the Project for the New American Century, which was brought up by, you know, was created by a think tank, which was created by the Bushes and the Cheneys and, you know, all of the insiders. And in that document, they said that they wanted to be able to have a military presence in the Middle East, but they couldn't justify making that type of an action without, and I quote, a new Pearl Harbor type of event. So we know that the military-industrial complex lusts for money and war. We know that they had talked about this with the Project for the New American Century. Now, another factor to throw in there is that the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, had gone to the Port Authority the Port Authority in New York, and they owned the World Trade Center. And the EPA told them, you've got a pair of towers here that are dirty buildings. In other words, they're loaded with asbestos, and that has to be cleaned up, and we need you to get it done within 10 years. Well, how do you get rid of the asbestos in those huge towers? In order to do that, you have to strip them right down to the girders, and you can't work like, say, 10 floors at a time, do this area, do that area. It doesn't work that way. The entire building would have to have been stripped and then the asbestos removed. And of course, in that removal process, it would have been raining down on Wall Street. So that was an impossible task. So they knew that they were going to have to get rid of these buildings somehow. So what do you do normally if you need to get rid of a building? Well, you bring it down by a controlled demolition, but you can't do that in downtown, you know, New York at Wall Street. So they had a real big problem on their hands. So Well, how could they figure that out? How do they get rid of the buildings and at the same time legitimize war in the Middle East? Well, it seems it would be a perfect opportunity to create an event and call it a terrorist attack. Okay, do you see how these puzzle pieces fit together? Okay, so this is something that would benefit them. Oh, and by the way, Larry Silverstein purchased the World Trade Center from the Port Authority about 6 or 7 months before the attack. Not only that, but he took out an insurance policy that would double the value if it was the result of a terrorist attack. Okay, another puzzle piece gets put together here.
Well, I mean, remember, there had already been one there.
Yeah, back in 93. Okay, they had an explosion in the base of one of the towers. Yes. So I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out who would benefit from this. Larry Silverstein, we know, would benefit from taking the towers down. We know that the military-industrial complex, shik-shing, 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 they would benefit from going to war. And, of course, everybody benefits because they get rid of these two dirty towers filled with asbestos. All right? So it makes perfect sense for them to figure out some sort of a way to bring the towers down without any blame, at least not to any blame of insurance companies or contractors or anything. They would have to have a terrorist attack. So do you see where I'm going? You've got the motive, you've got the means, and of course they created the opportunity. You know, and then you look at how everything happened and when it happened, how the first tower gets hit, the second tower gets hit, the Pentagon gets hit, and then the Flight 93 goes down in Pennsylvania. At least that's what was reported. Originally, Flight 93 was reported to have landed in Cleveland Hopkins Airport, and the mayor of Cleveland was talking about it on the news story. But then again, that whole story disappeared. So when you look at the whole big picture, you have to ask the question, how many coincidences have to occur before the coincidences are no longer coincidences?
Well, that's right. There was this plan on the books, wasn't there, Operation Northwoods, that was designed to be used against Cuba. The Correct. Idea being that an aircraft would be shot down or taken down and it would be blamed on the Cubans. And the idea Correct. Was to fill the aircraft with a whole bunch of military people posing as civilian people, but actually there'd be no one on there.
Right. Well, see, that's exactly what I believe happened. I believe that the commercial aircraft were switched with drones. Okay. And like I said, when I spoke to the military people, I cannot remember his name. Golly gosh. I'm just having a senior moment here for the Pentagon. Anyway, he told me that it was his belief that the planes that hit the towers were not commercial aircraft. Those were his words, not mine. And it also coincided with one of the airline pilots that I spoke with. When they looked at it, they said, no, that's not a commercial aircraft. It's very close to it, but it's not. And that's why I believe that they did use the framework of the Operation Northwoods document to disguise a plane as a commercial plane, switch them out. And that's what I think happened. Now, I don't know what happened to the original planes.
Several of them. I mean, look, it's funny, isn't it? They called it the Project for the New American Century. The first year of that new century, there's this massive attack which justifies, supposedly anyway, these massive invasions of countries that haven't actually done anything to deserve being invaded. So this is the century of unlimited war, you know, invade anybody you feel like. And we're 23 years on from all this now, Dave. I wonder, it seems like, you know, it doesn't seem quite that long to me, actually.
Yeah, goes by quick.
But things have really moved on, haven't they? We've now got this confrontation, which could turn very nasty in Europe with the Russians, as well as the horrors of Gaza in the Middle East. So this whole idea, it seems, was to get things going in the Middle East, with Afghanistan, with, you know, ramping up tensions and sanctions and things on the Iranians, invading Iraq with Tony Blair and Bush in their illegal war. So where do you think we are at now in this amazing new American century?
Well, I don't think it's any secret that the war in Ukraine has been generated basically by the very corrupt individuals. I mean, Zelensky was installed in 2014. And we know that that Ukraine has become a central hub for money laundering, drugs, sex trafficking. But one of the other big things is, of course, Hunter Biden has been with working with the Department of the DOD, Department of Defense, in getting those biological laboratories all along the northern border of Ukraine, right, butting right up against Russia. And I believe there's 32 or 33 of them. And I have to ask the question, of course, you're in the UK, but here in the United States, I mean, how would we feel if right across the northern border in Canada, well, how would we feel if there were biological laboratories, 30 of them, along our border? I don't think people.
Well, it's like having, say, 30 Wuhan labs next to, planted next to your building.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I don't blame Putin for saying, hey, you've got to cut that out. I don't want these biological laboratories here, especially being run by the Department of Defense of the United States, because they're doing illegal research there. It's illegal for them to do the research here in the United States, which is why they do it overseas. So, you know, out of country. So I could understand why Putin would say, look, I don't want that going on, and I don't want, you know, the trafficking and all that other stuff. And not only that, but they were ethnically cleansing the eastern Ukrainians, who were basically Russians. You know, the Azov Brigade are openly Nazis. You know, they got swastikas on their stuff, you know. So I don't see Putin as the bad guy here. I believe he was provoked. And to be honest, if Donald Trump had been put into, had taken the presidency in 2020, and of course we all feel that that election was completely corrupted, but if he had been president at that time, I don't think that would have happened. I really don't.
Well, look, I mean, we just had the presidential debate, the one debate that we're going to have, apparently, between Kamala Harris for the Democratic Party and Donald Trump for the Republicans, what a lot of people just now call the Uniparty. Anyway, what did you make of the debate, the discussion that they had, and the prospects for this coming election?
Well, of course, the debate was very heavily the deck was stacked against Trump. They were very biased. They didn't fact check Kamala Harris once, and she put out a whole bunch of information that was incorrect. I don't want to use the word she lied, but yeah, she lied. Trump got flustered, and I don't blame him. I mean, they've been hounding him for years now, for six. I mean, ever since he stepped into the Oval Office back in 2017, they've been after him and after him and after him. So I don't blame him for losing his temper a little bit there. However, I don't believe it hurt his campaign, because a lot of people can see through this now. The ABC network and NBC and CBS, they seem to think they're at the top of the heap for as far as the news department is concerned. But they're wrong, because people are no longer getting their news from these alphabet networks. They're on social media. And the social media, this is why they're so desperate to shut it down. They, you know, they have to control the flow of information. And for example, what's going on in Springfield, Ohio, they've imported 20,000 Haitians, and these people believe in voodoo. All right. They really, really do. I mean, you can say, oh, that's a conspiracy. No. They really do. That's what they do. And it's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And these people are always in survival mode. So yes, they do eat cats and dogs. Yes, they do animal sacrifices. Yes, they do practice voodoo. And so these 20,000 people are in this little city, Springfield, Ohio, and they're going through the city parks. They're capturing the ducks, the geese, the swans. They're killing them, eating them. They're going through neighborhoods, and people's animals are going missing. Not only that, but they're also being given driver's licenses, and they don't even know how to speak the language or read the signs. And they're creating lots of automobile accidents. It's a mess. This whole border crisis here in the United States is terrifying. And I don't know how they're going to be able to reverse it, because I talked to a border security guard about a month ago. He's been down on the border over 20-odd years, and he said he'd never seen anything like it. And the estimates are closer to 30 million at this point. They, you know, the mainstream media is saying it's 10 to 11 million. No, no, it's 30 or more, maybe even 35. I mean, what we're going to do with all these immigrants, I don't know.
Isn't this the end game of globalization? The idea is here really that borders are a fiction. I mean, we've got the same thing going on across the English Channel with migrants coming across hundreds every day.
Yeah. I mean, and I've seen some of the video footage of what's going on in London. You know, you can't take one culture and put it in with another culture and expect them to be able to, you know, co-mingle, especially when one culture is being suppressed. You know, I mean, they allow, from what I understand, you can't pray in England. You cannot pray in public or else you'll be arrested. Okay. However, you can get on your knees five times a day and pray to Allah. Okay. I don't understand how that's working out for you guys. I really don't. Oh, and I see now that if you post something that the establishment doesn't like, you're arrested. You want to talk about censorship? So much for freedom of speech over there in the UK, and I feel sorry what's going on over there for you guys.
Well, I think, I mean, to a large extent, these things are like the arrest of Julian Assange. They're there to send a message. Look, everybody, be scared, be very afraid, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure most of the police that I've met over the years would be prepared to go and make arrests or certainly to pursue prosecutions of people who were simply expressing a kind of commonly held view. So long as it's, I mean, you know, there's a basic fact here, and that is that you shouldn't be, and it would be a criminal offence to be inciting crime. But if what you're saying is just simply expressing an opinion without inciting any crime, that seems pretty obvious that you're going to, you know, you're going to get acquitted at court over that, although it may be there are complications that I don't really understand. Anyway, look, I mean, I ought to ask you also about the Middle East, because this is where the whole 9/11 thing apparently was directed, and things are getting really nasty down there. And it certainly looks as if Donald Trump is going to be very pro-Israeli. He's already moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. He seems to be what you might describe as a Christian Zionist, but a Zionist anyway.
I don't know. I think we're moving into an area where we would call it 5D chess. I think the world is figuring out where Israel is coming from. They understand now there's a difference between Judaism and Zionism. Okay, one is a religion. The other is political dogma. Zionism, the way I understand it, it was the phrase was coined by Theodore Herzl in 1894, who was an atheist. And the concept of Zionism is to establish a land or a state for one particular ethnic group. Now, in this case, we're talking about for the Jewish folks, all right? And in 1917, the Balfour Declaration between the Rothschild families and the British Crown was basically saying, you know, what we have to do is we have to create a Zionist state of Israel, all right? Now, I remind people that Israel is not a land. It is not a country. Israel was the name given to Jacob. God said to Jacob, you know, what is your name? And he said, my name is Jacob. And he said, and God says, henceforth, you will be known as Israel. And Jacob, or Israel, had 12 sons, hence the 12 tribes of Israel. So Israel is a people. And as long as those people keep their contract with God, then the whole world will be their country. All right. That's my take on it. But the point is, though, is I got a little bit off track. I look at who these people are. Who are the Rothschilds? I would challenge your listeners to do a search. Type in the name Jacob Rothschild, and the other name is Marina Abramovic. Now, Marina Abramovic is an artist, and she does some very macabre, sick art. She's also a self-professed and world-recognized high satanic priestess. And it's no secret about it, you know. And keep in mind, it doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter what I believe. What matters is what they believe. And if they believe in Satan, or at least she apparently does, I look at this, I did the search with Jacob Rothschild and Marina Abramovic, and then I clicked on images. You will find a photograph of Jacob Rothschild and Marina Abramovic posing in front of a portrait that was painted in, I think, the late 1600s. And the portrait is of Satan releasing his legions. So now I have to ask the question, wait a second. Rothschild and Marina Abramovic, they're obviously friends. They're working together. And if they're Satanists, is this a good thing or a bad thing? If the whole concept of creating a Zionist state of Israel was thunk up by the Rothschilds, is it a good thing or a bad thing? Furthermore, John Hopkins University has done DNA studies on the indigenous people of Palestine and found that 80% of them are indeed Semites. Their blood goes all the way back. That is where they've been for generations and generations and generations. However, the DNA testing of Israelites shows that 97% of them are not. They're Eastern Europeans. So the question is, who are the real Semites? Why is it that if we criticize Israel and that, you know, people are saying they're committing genocide, I would tend to agree. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't even use the word genocide. I would use extermination. They want that land. You know, geological surveys have showed that there's $500 billion of oil and gas underneath the Gaza Strip. Not only that, but they've had plans since the year 2000 for the Ben-Gurion Canal, which would go right through the heart of Gaza. So there's plenty of reasons that Israel, or that Bibi Netanyahu's regime, there's plenty of reasons why they want that land. And they think nothing of killing these people. I mean, they call them dogs. You know, Hitler called the Jews rats. Well, the Israelis call the Palestinians dogs. Hitler said, we are God's chosen. I mean, we are the master race. And yet Israel says we are God's chosen people. OK, I mean, there's too many similarities here. I don't know if you can see them or not, but the rest of the world is seeing it. Now, I don't know how Trump is going to play this. I think he's aware of this as well. But Sun Tzu says, I hold my friends close, but I hold my enemies closer. So I'm not quite sure how things are going to transpire, but I do think that we're going to see some major global changes coming up very soon. And I don't know how they're going to play out. I can only pray to God Almighty that, that we end up in the light instead of the darkness.
Well, certainly seems like a clash coming. Catherine Austin Fitz is quite good. She's very good on finance and money. She says it's a war on God and God's going to win. Puts it as simply as that. But what about your, if people are interested in following your work, Dave, where can people find you?
Well, I'm doing a little radio show, and it's called The WTF Reports. And you can go to thewtfreports.com, and you can listen to the archives. I also have a website, davevonkleist.com, and there are links there to the documentary films that I produced and also the music. I have 3 albums of politically incorrect, in-your-face, you lying son of a music. So I encourage you to go to YouTube, and it's all up there for free.
Finally, then, who's going to win this election?
Who do I think's going to win? Well, I got to be honest with you. I have a sneaking suspicion that we might not have an election in November. The reason I say that is I've been listening to a lot of people in the military and what's been going on with all of the lawfare that's going on here. And the corruption that I've never seen before in the Department of Defense, the CIA, the judicial, everything is screwed up. And you can't ask the fox to clean up the hen house. So, and I look back at our history, our first president, George Washington, was General George Washington before he was president. The Uniform Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ, was in place before the Constitution. The military is separate from the federal government. That's why our president is announced, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief. There's two different roles. The military is separate from federal law, and the military is there to guard the Constitution. Now, granted, we've had a lot of corruption in the military as well, but at this point in time, I think it's not hard to see that the corruption level in the federal government is irreparable. I don't know how we can get out of that other than a military intervention. And in fact, about a month ago, I was listening to an interview with Colonel Douglas McGregor, and he was asked the same question you asked me. Hey, what do you think is going to happen with the election in November? And he said, this is not me. He said, I don't believe that there's going to be a November election. I think we're going to have a military-run election before that. So I have to ask the question, what has to transpire between now and October, only a mere few weeks away? What's going to happen between now and October that would warrant a military-run election? So that's why I'm saying I think we're going to be seeing copious amounts of fecal matter hitting the air circulators very shortly. So get out your wellies, your raincoat, and your umbrella, because I think it's going to be a dung storm, shall we say.
Well, look, you've dodged the question there quite nicely. But if there is a normal kind of style election, you know, obviously the one of the major problems is that you've got these electronic voting machines which are actually hooked up to the internet, so it's quite easy for somebody to get in and change the votes. But anyway, who do you think will actually you know, not necessarily be get the most votes, but who will be the president next year?
I pray to God it'll be Trump. I mean, we already know what we're going to get with Kamala Harris and the Democrats. We've been living through hell for the past 3.5, almost 4 years, ever since Biden took office. It's just been an absolute disaster. And I think the American people can see it, including the Democrats. So I think that if the election goes forward, Trump has to win. That's my personal feeling. Love him or hate him.
Okay, Dave.
You know, it just won't work with the Democrats in place.
Dave von Kleist, thanks very much for joining us.
I hope I didn't get you into any trouble.
I hope you have
a problem with free speech over there, like so we do here too.
Well, look, I mean, I think a lot of this is fear mongering. Actually, yes, it makes a good story, but still, I can't see any situation in the country that gave us George Orwell where people in Britain are really afraid to speak their mind, because it's just something we tend to do the whole time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for the opportunity to join you on your broadcast, and I wish you well.
Okay, Dave, thanks very much for joining us.
God bless.